NDR Info. Nachtclub.
So bei mir im Studio in der zweiten Stunde sind, wie gesagt, Kelly Jones und Richard Jones von der Band Stereophonics. Und sie kommen beide gleich zu Wort. Erstmal Musik von ihrem aktuellen Album, Scream Above the Sounds. Hier ist jetzt Take a Tumble. Das ist also Take a Tumble von dem aktuellen Album Scream Above the Sounds von Stereophonics. Bei mir in Studios sind, wie gesagt, Kelly und Richard von der Band. Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Very good.
Yeah, a long time no see.
Yeah, 20 years and a few months.
Yeah. So, how have you been?
It's been good. Yeah, I mean, it's been very good. The last three albums particularly, you know, doing them in our own way, on our own labels and stuff. And there's a lot of 17-year-old kids in the front rows again. So it's been really exciting, actually.
Yeah, I mean, is that something which you've always had on board, really, that there's always been kind of younger people getting into you as time goes on?
I mean, certain songs bring in new people. You know, Dakota in 2005 brought in a new bunch, and then Indian Summer on Graffiti and the Train brought in a new bunch. And there's always a couple of songs that hit the radio that people go, oh, what's that song? And then not realise there's five albums before or eight albums before, whatever we are, and then...
And do the older people still come as well?
Yeah.
Or do they stay at home? Are they just on the sofa?
No, they're on this.
They sit at the back now, don't they?
Yeah.
So it's comfy seats.
Yeah. It's still kind of 50-50 male-female, but it spans from 17 to about 50 on the age brackets.
So. Right, okay. That's about three generations at
least.
Ja, also Kelly meint, dass es ihnen gut gegangen ist in den letzten 20 Jahren. Die waren nämlich meine Studiogäste 1997, als das Debütalbum erschienen ist. Wirklich eine Weile her. Und ja, sie haben natürlich eine schöne Karriere gehabt seitdem. Und er sagt, er freut sich auch sehr darüber, dass sie auch ein junges Publikum auch jetzt auch wieder haben. Es sind viele 17-Jährige dabei in den ersten Reihen und das ist nicht so selbstverständlich. Und er meinte, also die Bandbreite vom Alter her ist es ungefähr 17 bis 50. Also die alte Generation ist immer noch stark vertreten. I think it's funny, really, because you've obviously done incredibly well commercially, and not just artistically, but and you've been very consistent, and it's been like 10 albums in 20 years, so you've got this kind of obviously consistent work ethic. But for some reason, although you've been so big in terms of being commercial, you've always seems to come over as being almost like a low-profile band. Mm. You don't come over as being, like, overly flamboyant, like Coldplay or U2, you know what I mean? It's kind of like... Although you've been filling the same sort of stadium sometimes, you know. And I think, are you aware of that? Is that your perception of yourself or not?
I think, you know, we've been a band that's always kind of got on and we always try to have a good work ethic. But, you know, the main thing is, I guess when every time we make a new record, we just try to find surprises for ourselves, really. I guess we've always been a slightly underdog amongst, you know, the big kind of hitters and stuff. But,
Well, it's a relative term, isn't it, of course?
Yeah, but it's... Yeah, exactly. I mean, in a way, it's kept us working harder and trying to prove things to ourselves, I guess, and then...
I think we've always just wanted the music to do, you know, like, do the talking as well. We didn't want to be the type of bands to be caught, you know, like, by the paparazzi and, you know, like, in the right scene, this, that, and the other way, in the right clothes. We always wanted to just let the music do its job, really.
I mean, you'd think that would be easier said than done, though, wouldn't you, really? Though? I mean, just to say it's about the music, if once you get to a certain level. But, I mean, you've managed to stay normal, you've managed to stay down to earth. I mean, do you think that's your background, do you think?
I think it's got a lot to do with the background. We've got some guys that's been with us in the crew since day one. I think we've always had good people around us. You know, me and Richard being together since we were 3 years old, you know, and, you know, it kind of does go back to the background in many ways, I guess. But,
and it's a village he came from, isn't it? As opposed to, didn't come from London or whatever. It was a village, wasn't it?
So it's kind of a tiny little...
See, a village people.
Village, Yeah. But not in a YMCA way.
No, I was going to say that. How do I kind of support that consciousness?
But,
Yeah, so, but on the other hand, that was such a long time ago. You know, it was a long time ago that you were 3 years old.
Yeah, obviously.
So you have plenty of time to change. And yet, you haven't really...
Yeah, I think we've grown as people. We've learned a lot along the way, but I think the ethic of what the band is has been, you know, we've always took it very seriously, but not took ourselves seriously is the easiest way to describe it, I guess. You know, we never took for granted the one record did really well. We're on to the next record before we've, you know, finished the tour sort of thing. So, and I guess that is a kind of working class ethic, but there's still a fire in our belly, you know. There's still a passion for what we do. We've never really rested on our laurels. We don't really talk about the past albums. We always want to try to make new albums, you know. We could have done a 20-year anniversary tour around the world, but it's not really what sits that comfortable with us, you know. It's about going, what can we do next sort of thing.
Oh, that's interesting, that. So you weren't really comfortable about that nostalgia
No,
tour.
No, we did one show and it was fun for the 2 hours we did it. But then meeting everybody from the past afterwards, it just felt like a backward step, really. It was a bit.
I can understand that, yeah. Die sagen, dass sie tatsächlich so bodenständig geblieben sind. Und dass sie, es liegt einfach daran, dass sie, ja, sie haben immer den Ruf gehabt, ein bisschen so die Underdog zu sein, so ein bisschen so die Außenseiterband zu sein, obwohl sie kommerziell so erfolgreich gewesen sind. Dennoch hat man sie nie in denselben Topf geworfen wie Bands wie U2 oder Coldplay, obwohl sie auch teilweise in riesigen Stadien und Hallen gespielt haben. Und sie haben auch gesagt, dass sie ganz bewusst den Umgang mit Paparazzi, Fotografen und so weiter gemieden haben. Und dann habe ich gesagt, es ist auch gar nicht so selbstverständlich, das überhaupt hinzubekommen, wenn man so bekannt ist. Aber sie sagen, das liegt auch zum Teil an ihrer Herkunft. Sie kommen aus einem Dorf in Wales, ganz kleines Dorf, und die beiden kennen sich, also Richard und Kelly, seitdem sie 3 Jahre alt sind. Und er denkt, dass sie deshalb vielleicht einfach keine Allüren haben, dass sie nicht so größenwahnsinnig sind. Die nehmen die Musik ernst, aber die nehmen nicht sich selbst ernst. Und sie haben immer noch so eine Leidenschaft für die Musik. Es geht wirklich um die Musik in erster Linie für sie. Er redet vom Feuer im Bauch und das ist immer noch das Gefühl, das sie haben. Und sie haben zum Beispiel als das Debütalbum World Gets Around das 20-jährige Jubiläum gefeiert wurde, dann haben sie so eine Tour dazu gemacht, aber die fühlten sich gar nicht so richtig wohl dabei, so eine reine Nostalgiegeschichte. Und die hätten eigentlich lieber das gelassen. Die haben sich fast verpflichtet gefühlt, aber sie haben sich gar nicht so richtig wohl dabei gefühlt, weil sie mögen wirklich lieber an die Zukunft denken. Und nun hören wir ein Stück von dem besagten Debütalbum World Gets Around, und zwar 1,000 Trees. Das war 1,000 Trees von dem Debütalbum World Gets Around 1997. So, I can understand you thinking, you know, you want to keep on pushing the music forward. And was this album different in any way to the others in that respect? I mean, is our album sometimes more difficult than others to come to fruition?
I think for us as a band, I think the last three, you know, Graffiti on the Train, Keep the Village, and this one, Scream Above the Sounds, have all come from a similar kind of work ethic. I guess it stems from the first time we ever had our own studio. So we got our own little writing, you know, overdubbing kind of studio in Brook Green in London. But we were going to ICP Studios in Brussels just to cut the main band tracks, which was great, just going on the Eurostar, cut some stuff for 2 weeks, come back and then work on in our own time, in our own studio. So I guess what ended up happening was we weren't really making albums, we were just going to work every day making songs. And that gave us a much freer approach to record making because it wasn't confined to like 6 weeks in this studio with this producer in this time block. It allowed us, one day you could be working on a punk rock record, the next day it could be like a country song, the next day it could be some orchestral piece, and you know, you could just chip away at stuff, and then in the end you got all this stuff on a hard drive, and then it was much more about compiling the records to see what goes well with each other, and they became a much more colourful experience. So some songs on this record were finished before Graffiti on the Train, and some songs on the last album were, but they found a place on this record amongst new songs as well. So
okay.
It's been a really, really great way of working in the last 3 years. It just
so you're
felt
becoming
more
organic in a sense in the way you're working.
Yeah. I mean, the writing thing is a constant thing. You always keep the tap dripping, but the process of making a record, there's no pressure on like, oh, we've got 8 great songs, let's write another 2 just to put on the album. It hasn't been like that. It's just been like, oh, let's just put on what feels right for the record.
Also Kelly sagt, dass die letzten 3 Alben haben was gemeinsam, dass sie alle in einem eigenen Studio entstanden sind in London. Und sie haben zwar auch einige Stücke auch aufgenommen in Brüssel, in einem großen Studio dort, aber die Knochenarbeit ist in ihrem eigenen Studio in London entstanden. Und weil sie dann deshalb keinen Zeitdruck hatten, weil sie mussten kein Studio buchen, dann war es auch nicht befristet. Und deshalb ist es alles so ein natürlicher Prozess geworden. Die haben das Gefühl, dass die Musik sich auf ganz natürliche Weise jetzt entwickelt. Und sie stehen unter gar keinen Zeitdruck. Und die können unterschiedliche Sachen machen, irgendwie einen Tag zum anderen. Und die können wirklich, sie können sich sehr frei fühlen. Und er meinte, dass ein paar der Songs auf diesem Album jetzt sind sogar ein bisschen älter, die sind schon einige Jahre älter, sind aber jetzt auf diesem Album erschienen, also weil sie jetzt auf einmal passen. Und sie sind also deshalb, im Grunde genommen, haben sie so eine Art so Freiheit gewonnen, dadurch, dass sie jetzt ihr eigenes Studio haben. So what would you like to hear from the album now then? Is a song which you think is particularly representative of the organic way you work these days?
A track we've been enjoying live, maybe Geronimo. That kind of represents a bit of what we're doing. It's very free, a bit more Tom Waits kind of influenced, a bit saxophone and goes a bit nuts, yeah. That's kind of good.
Bit of a choir on there as well. We put on there, didn't we?
Which was fun. So das Stück Geronimo hören wir gleich. Das ist ein Stück, das Sie besonders mögen. Sie denken, es ist besonders gelungen. Man hat ein bisschen Tom Waits-artig, auch was die Arrangements betrifft. Und also ziemlich so bunt gemacht. Und er denkt, das ist auch ein gutes Beispiel dafür, für diese freie Art von Arbeitsweise, die Sie jetzt haben, diese künstliche Freiheit, die Sie jetzt genießen. Hier ist also Geronimo von Stereophonics, von Ihrem aktuellen Album A Scream Above the Sounds. So, das war Geronimo von Stereophonics, von dem Album Scream Above the Sounds. Bei mir im Studio sind immer noch Kelly und Richard von der Band. It's obviously the case that you've always known how to play to your own strengths. I mean, when you started off at such a young age, you always sounded very self-assured, almost kind of beyond your age. It was almost, you seemed to belie your age at the time. And I think you've managed to keep that. There's, there are bands that sound maybe less confident than you or more vulnerable, whatever. And I think you've always, this kind of self-assurance has always come over as being like the essence of what you do.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I think we've always allowed the fact that the boss of the band really is the song, you know? And the songwriting has been crucial, and we know that scenes will go away, fads will go away, you know, we could go away for periods of time, but the songs remain, really. And even more so now, I think, with streaming, because people really need a reason to listen to your music if they want to. They aren't going to go and buy it because they haven't heard it before, you know? So I think, I think in this last three records, I think the band has definitely found an element of confidence again in the work that we're doing, because we're very proud of the work we're doing, and we see new audiences come to the shows. But, you know, you do go through doubt and ups and downs and all that kind of stuff through 20 years. But I think having a catalogue now of 20 years worth of work, 120 songs, whatever, to pick and choose from that amount of work every night for a set list, it does give you an element of confidence, because it doesn't really matter what people say about you or what people think about you or whatever it might have been that hurt you in the past or bothered you or niggled at you. The work speaks for itself now after 20 years, and you can just go, well, look, there's a lot of work there, you know, so we feel very proud of that.
Mm. We never boxed ourselves in as well with kind of like one genre of music. We've always been great, like, fans of so many different types of music, and we just, you know, like, when we're in the studios, like, well, if a song pops his head up and it sounds like a country song, let's do it. Or if it sounds like a hard rock song, let's go down that angle with it. And I think there's confidence behind that as well, knowing that we can do all these different types of music.
It's almost quite improbable what you've achieved really over 10 albums, because, I mean, I know all the 10 albums, and I listen to a lot of music, obviously, and I mean, I don't like all the albums in exactly the same way. I mean, I'd have my favourites in albums I don't like quite as much. But there's never been an album of yours where there isn't at least one or two tracks on it, which I think are really, really good, like really over average, like I said, which was I'm looking for doing a radio show all the time, looking for stuff which is over average, which I can play on the show.
Yeah.
And I can depend on you to give me something. I mean, that's, you know, so far so good, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen in the next 20 years. But you know what I mean? And so you've managed to kind of keep that level in some way, you know, and I think that must be... Is that something that you've had to work at, or is it just something that comes by nature?
No, you have to work at it. I mean, you have to put the time in and the hours in, and, you know, lyrically I try to figure out things that I'm really going through and things around me that really mean something to me. I try to be as honest as I can with everything that I write. And yeah, of course, some albums are going to be favourites of other people and less favourites of other people, and vice versa. You know, that's what music's about, really.
But a lot of it's about being young as well. A lot of people stop writing good songs when they get to about 28 or 30.
Yeah.
That does actually happen. I'm not going to mention any names. I could actually name lots of people where they actually make the best work when they're really young. It just fades away after that. Yeah.
I think for us, we always knew, like Richard said, I guess, what he touched on there is there's so many styles and people that we like. A lot of those bands, I think, like you're referring to between 20 and 28, they were all a lot more concerned about how cool they were and the sound of whatever their first record were, and about hedonism and stuff on your first album, and after that they had nothing else to say. That's fair enough, you know, but we always had ideas about stories and concepts that we wanted to try with our band, so we do genuinely feel like we've only just touched the sides of it. I'd love to go to Nashville and work with a bunch of guys in Nashville. I'd love to do a lot of different types of albums. In fact, after 20 years now, the pressure's kind of becoming less for me, and wanted to go even more somewhere else, because you can't keep competing for the A-list on the radio stations, the big TV shows. After a certain point, if it comes to you, brilliant, but I'm not going to make records to to deliver, if you know what I mean. You know, it's about making what makes me feel like I'm doing something that I really believe in, you know, and when that comes out of me, normally that's the ones they play on the radio the most anyway, because people connect with it, you know?
Yeah, okay. Ja, mir ist auch gefallen, dass die Band von Anfang an sehr souverän rüberkam, auch dass sie ganz jung waren. Die waren 18, als sie angefangen haben. Dann kamen sie sehr selbstbewusst rüber und sie haben immer so diese Selbstsicherheit ausgestrahlt. Und das ist irgendwie wirklich so ein Konstant irgendwie immer dabei gewesen, immer bei ihrer Musik. Und Kelly hat es auch bestätigt. Er meinte, es geht auch wieder darum, um die Wichtigkeit des Songs, von den Liedern. Er meinte, dass... sie haben immer Wert drauf gelegt auf die Wichtigkeit des Songs. Und deshalb, sie als Persönlichkeiten sind einfach nicht so wichtig. Und es gibt natürlich dann so szenelastige Bands, die kommen und gehen und die nicht diese Langlebigkeit haben. Und Stereophonics haben immer gewusst, dass sie eine Langlebigkeit hätten. Und die sind schon sehr stolz auf ihr Erbe und auf das, was sie geschafft haben. Aber sie haben doch ihre Zweifel, ihre Selbstzweifel gehabt. Ich habe die noch nicht gemerkt, wie gesagt. Aber er meinte, dass wenn man 20 Jahre dabei ist, hat man schon seine Zweifel. Also ob man gut genug ist und ob man es immer noch schaffen kann, gut zu bleiben. Aber er meinte, letztendlich haben sie 120 Songs ungefähr. Und wenn man natürlich so viele Songs zur Auswahl hat, wenn man dann auf Tour geht, dann weiß man natürlich, dass man irgendwas Richtiges gemacht hat. Und die haben immer einen sehr großen, unterschiedlichen Musikgeschmack gehabt. Also sie haben so eine große musikalische Bandbreite, was ihren eigenen Geschmack betrifft. Und das hilft, wenn es darum geht, Inspiration zu suchen für neue Songs. Aber er sagt, es ist letztendlich so eine ehrliche, bodenständige Arbeit, die sie machen. Und er hat immer noch viele Pläne. Er würde gerne nach Nashville, er würde gerne mit Musikern dort arbeiten. Er meinte, es gibt so viele Möglichkeiten, die ihm dann offen stehen. So we're going to hear What's All the Fuss About Now, which is my favorite song on the album.
Yeah.
And I think it's... like the surprise track in the sense that it's a real standout. I think the arrangement's particularly interesting.
Yeah.
Were you aware of that at the time? Did you kind of take yourself by surprise with that song? Or
it's a very different song for the band. Yeah. I mean, lyrically, it, you know, I guess it's kind of one of those, you know, what's the meaning of life type of songs. You know, you're running around and there's a lot of beautiful moments you kind of miss in the rat race, I guess. But musically, it did come from. I wrote the song on nylon string guitar, and it was, you know, quite a different chord progression and stuff for me. But then, you know, Jamie, our drummer, adding like a little jungle drum beat thing to it, and then I kind of wanted to make it a bit like Windmills in My Mind or something, you know, Dusty Springfield, so it kind of just takes you on this trip. And we all just added our own little bits to it, and it became quite a magical little piece, really. Mm-hmm.
It's got a great intensity to it, which you try and build behind the lyrics, because, you know, like, it does ramp up. And that's what you try to do with the music, is just try and add to that intensity, which I think works really well with that track, yeah.
Well, you said the Dusty Springfield track, Winfield's...
Windmills of My Mind, yeah. Windmill,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like it, but it reminds me of what that song does, you know. I don't know why, really. I kind of always have, like, a reference point like that, I guess, to some things in my head, and then when I listen to them back-to-back, they don't sound anything alike. But there's something in my head that makes me think that,
so
you know?
Something gives you a spark, nonetheless, yeah. And it ends up sounding completely different, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but you do still like to delve into the past when it comes down to... I mean, your role models tend to be kind of really old role models, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I you know, I like stuff like Lead Belly and Tom Waits. I love the Nick Cave stuff, you know. I like people that tell stories, you know. I love all the Otis Redding and Muddy Waters stuff, but we listen to all the stuff that's going on as well, you know, whether it's new Queens of the Stoneys records or...
Well, in a sense, there's always been something a bit kind of folk about you, in a sense, in terms of attitude, because you know, the storytelling, and that was right from the word go, the case, wasn't it?
It was. Maybe that came from the small town. You know, I was always the youngest of all the brothers. Rich was pretty much the youngest in his, and we were always surrounded by older people. And when you're the youngest, I guess your purpose is to listen and not to speak. So we kind of heard a lot of stories, and then maybe one day I just wrote them all down. I don't know.
Right,
okay. It was a very romantic upbringing as well. It was a lot to do with music, you know, like our brothers playing lots of music. And even when we first started going out to the local pubs, you know, like you go back to somebody's house, you'd always put on music and have a sing-along, really. And that's kind of what happened every weekend if you weren't doing the gig.
Okay. Ja, wir hören gleich das Stück What's All the Fuss About, mein Lieblingsstück von dem neuen Album. Und die haben auch bestätigt, sie finden es auch besonders gelungen. Und auch für sie eine andere Art von Song auf jeden Fall. Also von der Thematik her geht es um die Bedeutung des Lebens und wie man die Schönheit des Lebens manchmal nicht so begreift, weil man irgendwie zu sehr beschäftigt ist mit seinem Alltag. Und musikalisch ist er inspiriert worden für das Lied von Dusty Springfield. von dem Song Wimble of My Mind. Er meinte, es hat zwar nicht in Wirklichkeit was mit dem Song zu tun, und die beiden Songs haben nicht so viel gemeinsam, aber dennoch war es die ursprüngliche Inspiration dafür. Und er meinte, es geht ihm oft so, dass er eine Inspiration bekommt, aber letztendlich das Lied, das danach entsteht, hat eigentlich gar nichts mit dem Lied zu tun, das er eigentlich im Kopf gehabt hat, als er angefangen hat zu komponieren. Das ist schon ganz seltsam. Und was die Musikauswahl betrifft, wenn Sie selber Musik konsumieren, dann sind es oft, ist es auch richtig alte Musik, also richtig alte Vorbilder. Leute wie Led Belly, Tom Waits, Nick Cave, Otis Redding. Und er meinte, das liegt wahrscheinlich daran, dass sie die Jüngsten in ihren Familien waren. Also in beiden Fällen die jüngsten Kinder. Und deshalb sind sie dann geprägt worden von den älteren Geschwistern und von den Eltern und von der Musik, die sie von älteren Herrschaften quasi gehört haben. Also hören wir jetzt What's All the Fuss About von Stereophonics, von dem Album Scream Above the Sound. So that's What's All the Fuss About von dem Album Scream Above the Sounds von Stereophonics. Bei mir im Studio sind Kelly und Richard von der Band. So, I mean, you're obviously still really comfortable with who you are and what you're doing and what you've been doing. Are there any regrets at all? I mean, do you regret maybe, just thinking of Marquis Smith recently, maybe not having like the hypnotist status something like Marquis Smith had, you know what I mean? Like nobody, he couldn't say anything wrong, could he? He could say the most controversial things and everybody just tolerated it, didn't they?
Yeah.
I met him a few times and he was crazy, but he had a natural charm about it.
Yeah, I saw them playing in Ireland the fall. It was great, actually.
Yeah.
It was really intense, but really took you on some sort of journey, you know? It was a cool gig.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, you know, there are certain people, for whatever reason, they gain this almost like a... Like this...
The free pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we never had the free pass. That's probably what made us work for so long.
I don't know. I don't think we've observed, you know, like, that observation of ourselves, though. You know, like, we're still trying to prove a point with what we're doing, and I don't know. I don't know if it's time will tell at the end of days. So.
It's kind of the tortoise and the hare, you know. There's a lot of bands who were out when we came out who are not around now, and I genuinely feel really, you know, chuffed to the fact, I guess, that, you know, we're making our 10th album when we sit next to whether it's Rag and Bone Man on his first record or George Ezra or whoever it may be that's happening and the kid of the month, and we're still playing the same radio stations, TV shows, and the songs are still being relevant with young people. So that's more important to me. I mean, I'm way more comfortable in my skin now that in the last few years than I was through, you know, my late 20s and 30s, because you're thrown into a whirlwind of a world where you don't really know what's going on, really. You know, you've been asked and you've been thrown on magazine covers and stuff like that. And, you know, we were quite small town kind of guys, really. So we enjoyed it. We had a laugh with it when it all happened and stuff like that. But I think I feel more comfortable just doing my work now and being, you know, who I am, really, you know.
Mm-hmm. Er hat auch gesagt, dass sie sich sehr wohl in ihrer Haut fühlen heutzutage und viel mehr als früher. Er meinte, als sie angefangen haben, war es eigentlich schon so ein Stressfaktor, weil sie so viel Aufmerksamkeit bekommen haben, als sie jung waren und irgendwie permanent auf irgendwelchen Titelseiten zu sein von Zeitschriften. Und die haben manchmal wirklich die Welt nicht verstanden. Und also die Verrücktheiten der Musikszene fanden sich teilweise schon sehr anstrengend. Und er hat sich verglichen, oder hat die Band verglichen mit der Unterschied zwischen Schildkröten und Hasen. Aber Hasen sind sehr schnell, aber verschwinden ganz schnell. Und Schildkröten sind langsam, aber sind dann immer noch dabei, Jahre später. Und sie sind dann quasi die Schildkröten, die dann nur so langsam Fortschritte machen. Und ich habe gerade den Vergleich gestellt mit Marquis Smith von The Fall, wie Marquis Smith immer diesen Hypnostatus gehabt hat. Und er hatte diesen Freischein zu tun und sagen, was er wollte. Und alle Leute fanden es trotzdem irgendwie toll. Und man ist irgendwie kritischer gewesen, also was die Glaubwürdigkeit von Stereophonics betrifft. Die haben auch nicht diesen selben Hypnis-Faktor genossen. Aber er meinte jetzt, dass er älter ist, ist es ihm eigentlich relativ egal. Er denkt, das hat für ihn einfach nicht den Stellenwert. Und wenn er sieht, dass er auch neben ganz jungen Künstlern, also wirklich, dass er mit denen konkurrieren kann und dass ganz junge Leute ihre Musik dann toll finden. Und das ist natürlich wirklich Bestätigung genug. Also jetzt hören wir wieder ein altes Stück, und zwar in diesem Fall von ihrem zweiten Album, Performance and Cocktails. Das war 1999, und wir hören das Stück Just Looking. Das war Just Looking von Stereophonics, von ihrem zweiten Album, Performance and Cocktails. Do you think it's the case that you've just always been hardworking? Because interesting we talk about The Fall, because, I mean, they kind of made a record almost every year, didn't they?
Yeah.
Like 32 albums from 1979 or whatever. So it's at least every 2 years, sometimes even two a year.
Yeah.
And I think you've kind of averaged it certainly two one every two years. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, is that been a conscious stance to do that, or have you deliberately avoided the hiatus for 5 years or 6 years?
I guess there's a
and is there any reason for that, because you're scared maybe the creativity drying up or anything, or
I think when you're younger, I suppose there's an element that you're afraid to risk the opportunity of somebody coming in and taking your place. You know, we always knew we had our own sound and stuff, but we didn't really want to take time out. I mean, time out to do what? You know, we didn't really understand that concept, really, because we'd be waiting all our life. All our life to get to that point, really.
But it isn't anything else.
Yeah, exactly. And but I think I've got to a point also that I'd like to bring out the records more frequently, because this album's like a year old before it's released. There's always like a campaign that has to be worked out with the powers that be, which is fine, you know, that's how they sell stuff. But I think now there's a lot more, you know, a quick way of getting music to people with the streaming stuff. You know, I'd love to make some music like on Friday and then bring it out the Friday after. You know, I'd love to get to that point where I can just drop songs. I know a lot of R&B artists and hip-hop artists do that all the time, but it doesn't really happen in our genre, you know. I'd like to
it's
do that.
It's hard graft, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd rather put the songs out there and maybe compile them all at the end, a bit like they did in the 50s, really. Just chuck a single out and then compile them onto some LP later down the line, you know.
But, yeah.
But we'll see how it goes. It's definitely a transition period in how you get the music to the people, but there is a huge demand for new music all the time.
Yeah. And when you actually started off, were you aware that you had an instantly recognisable sound? Because, I mean, right from the very word go, like from the very first single, it was always the case that you just sounded like you.
Yeah.
And you didn't sound like anybody else. And it had something to do with your voice as well, of course.
Yeah.
But because that's always been a very important component. I mean, you're not allowed to leave the band, definitely not.
Yeah, well, but then saying that, you know, there's an independent, an individual feel to all three. When it was the three of us with Stuart, when Stuart was alive, I mean, the way Stuart played the drums, the way Rich played the bass and I played the guitar, it just sounded like us. We had more American influences than British, I guess, at the time. We came out in 95, 96. You know, we were more kind of into, I guess, your Pearl Jams and your Soundgardens and your Black Rose than we were really into the Britpop scene. So we did.
You were
really
a bit late for Britpop, right?
Yeah, we came just behind that, 96, yeah. So, I mean, we loved all those bands and stuff, but it was much more influenced by, you know, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Neil Young. It was much heavier, you know, and the singing was a lot more in your face, you know, he wasn't shooting.
I think he's the only singer, John Fogerty, actually sounded a bit like you, or you sound a bit like
him.
Yeah,
I love John Fogerty, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting that, because I can't think of, I mean, your voice is pretty original, but if there is one, you know, that guy from the past.
Yeah, I
haven't heard him for a long time. But
I used to cover a lot of John Fogerty records.
Yeah.
Maybe where we got it from.
Just trying to imitate him.
Yeah.
Been imitating for like 25 years.
Yeah, nobody noticed.
Nobody
noticed.
Now. And now it's come to light at last.
You've heard it here first.
Das ist der Copycat, ja. Nee, die sagen, dass sie tatsächlich, als sie angefangen haben, eigentlich eher von amerikanischer Musik beeinflusst worden sind. Bands wie Pearl Jam und Soundgarden und solche Bands. Oder Creedence Clearwater Revival. Also nicht, also die Britpop-Szene der Zeit eigentlich, die 94 angefangen hat. Und das ist möglicherweise ein Grund, warum sie ein bisschen ausgefallen geklungen haben von Anfang an. Es war tatsächlich so, dass sie, man konnte sie nicht in den Topf werfen mit irgendeiner anderen Band. Die haben immer eigenen Sound gehabt. Kellys Stimme natürlich war auch immer besonders einzigartig. Und das hat natürlich auch geholfen, dass sie eigene Identität aufgebaut haben. Aber sie denken tatsächlich, dass sie im Grunde genommen ein bisschen so unangepasst waren. Und dass sie deshalb auf irgendeine Weise so Einzelgänger waren in der Musikszene. And if it's very difficult for you to say that you were talking about having 120 songs, but is there one song from the past, from it doesn't matter which album, which you think is like for you both, like particularly important, or is that not possible to judge because you've got too many important songs?
Well, to play?
Yeah.
I think maybe Tomorrow and Dakota seem to have a pretty universal affinity with people. I don't know what that is. If we did, we would bottle it.
Yeah.
But I don't think we could play a show without them. But we always play Local Boy in the Photograph as well. So
yeah,
that was our first kind of single. So I don't know.
And then Tomorrow and Dakota you play.
Maybe Tomorrow, yeah.
They kind of take on their own life as soon as they're out there. Like Indian Summer, when you play that, you know, like the crowd just react in certain ways to certain songs, and
you don't mind having to play them.
No, you because the crowd just it becomes their song. Really,
the energy they give back is like Mexico City. We played just before Christmas for the first time, and we wrote a set list, and we did the set list where I could hear kids in the front row talking about Indian Summer, the track Rich mentioned. We didn't have it in our playlist, and then we just did it, and they all went mental. And it must have obviously been a big track they were streaming in that part of the world, you know. So, yeah, it becomes theirs, really.
Okay. So, yeah. So which one do you really want to go for, then?
What, to play?
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah.
Dakota's always a good one to end on, isn't it?
Yeah. Number one, yeah. Dakota. Okay. Yeah. Es war dann jetzt Dakota, das war eine Nummer 1 Single für die. Und es ist natürlich schwierig für sie zu sagen, wirklich welches Stück am wichtigsten ist überhaupt in ihrem Leben. Die haben so viele Songs. Es gibt, also, aber die sind eigentlich davon ausgegangen, jetzt mit ihrer Entscheidung, wie das Publikum reagiert. Es gibt bestimmte richtige Lieblingssongs wie Tomorrow Dakota und Indian Summer und Local Boy and the Photograph. Aber sie haben gesagt, Dakota wäre eine gute Entscheidung. Right, well, thanks very much for talking to me.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate
it. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, I hope it's not going to be another 20 years then.
Yeah, I remember your face so clearly because you look exactly the same as Stuart's brother, Paul.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I remember it at the time when I met you the first time. So, yeah, I almost sound a bit like him. So when I look at you, I just remind me of Stuart's brother, Puggy. That's his nickname. But,
oh, yeah. Right, that's weird, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, well, there you go. Ja, hatte ich mich erinnert, weil ich dann tatsächlich so aussehen sollte wie der Bruder von Stuart. Und er meinte, dass... Und deshalb hatte mein Gesicht in Erinnerung gehabt, irgendwie noch 20 Jahre später. You'll have forgotten the actual content of the interview we did at the time, no doubt. But
where was it?
It was actually in the same building. No, it wasn't. Right. Yeah, well, it was in the same building as this.
Right.
It might have even been here because this was this.
Yeah, this
now, I think
familiar.
It probably was because it used to be for the live shows, actually, a long time ago.
Did we play acoustic tracks I mean, as well?
No, I don't think you did, no. Mm. But it was a live show. And I remember discussing that you had, from that album, like almost every track was a single.
Yeah.
And had like a whole pile of singles, all these B-sides.
Oh, yeah, Thousand Trees and all that.
Right,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
I remember talking about that. I don't really remember much about it otherwise myself. But anyway. Anyway, good to see you again.
You too. Okay. Thank you very much.
So meine Studiogäste waren Kelly und Richard von der Band Stereophonics und zum Schluss hören wir jetzt Dakota von der Band und das war der Nachtclub mit Paul Baskerville. Ich wünsche euch eine gute Nacht.
NDR Info. Nachrichten.